Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls, questions with Luis Manero as we talk about out-of-body experiences. How about your stories as well? Have you ever been able to astral project? Check in with us. And welcome back to Coast, Luis Manero with us, demystifying the out-of-body experience. Where can people pick up your book, Luis?
Basically everywhere, you know, Amazon, Google Books, ebook. So pretty much everywhere. And also on our website, of course, iacworld.org.
What is a shared OBE?
A shared OBE or a joint OBE is when two people have an out-of-body experience. They have a common experience. They meet outside their body. And then afterwards, of course, they come back and they, remember, and they're able to confirm, actually, even their out-of-body experience with the account of the other one. Those are always, I would say, a lot of fun, simply because, again, it takes away a lot of subjectivity from the experience. It's certainly not something that only happened or that only you know, but you can, again, confirm it with the other one. And there are many, many cases of that. I myself have had several OBEs with colleagues, with relatives, etc., that afterwards we both remember, and they are educational at the same time.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Aaron, truck driving in Nebraska, east of the Rockies. Let's get you started. Aaron, go ahead.
First time caller. My question is: Have you been to the fifth dimension? Because I met some lady who said she is from the fifth dimension, and she didn't talk verbally. She, I could hear her in my head. I mean, she showed me two futures. One was good. One was where I was in somebody's kitchen, and they had no electricity. No one had electricity, and she was, mixing up potatoes in a big clear container, and then her husband or the man of the house opened up the refrigerator. The only thing in there was two boxes.
The fifth dimension.
Yeah, different people, I guess, they categorize the dimensions in different fashion. And I know sometimes the fifth dimension, or the fourth or the sixth, etc. It's an expression, I guess, to say that the person has a higher degree of development or of evolution. And when you have out-of-body experiences, talking about dimensions, there is the sort of like what you can see here at the physical level. Let me simplify a little bit, like in real time, so to speak. And then you can go to several other layers of reality, and there aren't only five or seven or, 11. There are hundreds of them, and I certainly haven't visited them all. I don't know if there's anybody who has. This is almost like saying how many cities there are in the world. I don't know if anybody has. But you can classify the cities of the world by saying, they are arranged, or geography, they are arranged in seven continents, or, the cities of, Canada, the cities of the U.S., etc. So probably when she's saying, the fifth dimension, she's referring to a higher degree of development. Now, the image that she probably gave to you, I don't know if at some psychic level, she was able to help you to see either a precognition, a moment that might possibly happen in the future, or even what is called a remote viewing, a traveling clairvoyance, in which we actually have a image of things, that are occurring at the moment, or that again might even occur in the future. So difficult sometimes, to arrive at a consensus of what is the fourth, the fifth, or the sixth dimension, because again, like I was explaining before, there really isn't an address outside the body. So you need to sit down with a person and try to understand what type of place or dimension are they trying to refer to.
All right, next up, thanks for that call, by the way, Aaron. Nikolai in San Diego, west of the Rockies. Nikolai, welcome, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to be telling about my experience as a past life. However, I was very interested by the last call.
Go ahead, yeah.
I probably should tell my past life. I am over 1,400 years old.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I bet you don't look it. Not a day over what?
Not over 27.
All right.
This is my seventh life here on Earth. I have been traveling the dimension via dimensional corridor for that entire time, various looking for different people, traveling through time via out-of-body experience, most commonly referred to as the dream plane by the sorcerers and the druids and so on and so forth, especially the Native Americans. Now, the fifth dimension is the corridor itself. Inside the corridor, of course, you have the various doorways to the different dimensions. That is the fifth dimension itself. That is the corridor. As for me, I have gone through way too many doors, and unfortunately, I have, well, I've seen too much. But I have finally found what I was looking for, and well, this is my final life. I'll be finally calling it from here on out.
All right, what do you think, Lewis?
Okay, I'm not quite sure if there is a question there.
No question, just more of an observation, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. First of all, you know what we see certainly is that we are growing through all of these lives, and we have different periods of lives in different places. So we certainly have observed that. I think you, George, even were asking me at the beginning of the show about people who are born in other planets, you know, ETs and everything, and you see them outside the body. So at some moments we are being born, or individuals or souls, you know, they are born in other planets. At certain moments they are born here. Now, obviously difficult for me to say. I will have to agree with here with you, you know, saying that this is your last life. And if that happens to be the case, then, you know, good for you. Good for you. Again, difficult, you know, for me to say whether that's the case or not. But what we see certainly is that, you know, there are so many things that we need to refine, to evolve, to improve on. I can tell you certainly in my case, I still have a long trajectory ahead, certainly. So if that happens to be your case, you know, what can I say? Good for you.
When Christ resurrected and then ascended into the clouds, witnessed by his apostles, might that have been astral projection? What do you think that was?
It could very well have been. And, you know, you also see in the Bible, you know, a lot of different places in which they obviously didn't use the word astral projection or out-of-body experience on any of these.
No, they didn't even know what that meant, I guess.
Indeed, but you see that they are having, you know, or they're explaining and describing experiences that they certainly seem to be like out-of-body experiences. And even, you know, as the last caller was saying, you know, many shamans, many different traditions, they many times say, you know, I had this projection or this you know, dream, etc. And in many instances, it is an out-of-body experience. And even with many people in the audience, of course, you know, sometimes when they have a very vivid dream, especially those dreams of like flying, for example, some of them, they could be just simply dreams. But many of them, in many instances, they are out-of-body experiences, and the person is actually at a distance from their physical body. So, and sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, catching on to it, understanding it a little bit, doing certain things so as to become aware of the fact that we are in an out-of-body experience.
Luis, at the International Academy of Consciousness, can you train people to produce OBEs?
Yes, indeed. This is exactly what we do, or this is a big part of what we do, besides the research, is the education. And so we have, you know, these centers where we give classes all over the world, in essence. I know that you, George, and me, we're here in Los Angeles. I'm in Culver City, actually, at the moment here.
Oh, yeah, sure.
In our center, indeed. But, you know, New York, Miami, Denver, Hawaii, San Francisco, certainly. And besides that, we also have online classes. The online classes are interesting because, of course, we're able to give all the theory, and then as homework, we leave a lot of the exercises for people. But afterwards, you know, the next day, we're asking them, you know, how did it go? How did it feel for you? So that we can give them certain more personalized feedback so that they are able to break through and then end up having their out-of-body experiences.
It is a remarkable phenomenon, is it not?
It is. It is. And, you know, and sometimes, just like, by the way, I keep going back to Mitch in the last segment, sometimes it's just a matter of a little bit of perseverance. And you certainly need a little bit of perseverance, not a whole lot. There are certain learnings that take a lot longer, you know, learn to play the piano, a musical instrument, etc. It's a lot harder than out-of-body experiences. But certainly the benefits and the eye-opening experiences that come from this are unbelievable, are incredible.
They sure are. Let's go to Merlin in Ontario, Canada now. Welcome to the program, Merlin. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm really enjoying this episode right here, right
well,
now.
Well, thank you.
And thanks for clarifying that wake-up jerk thing, too, because that happens to me in my midday naps.
Oh, yeah.
And it's incredibly violent. I'll fall off the bed or the couch and wake up sweats. But anyway, 10, 11 years ago, Peace Corps in Jamaica, I'm in the cockpit country at a bus stop. There's probably 20, 30 people standing around. And all of a sudden, I'm up 20 feet in the air. I'm looking down. I can see my floating body. I can see my feet. And below me are all the people waiting for the bus. And there's my body also going through incredibly violent seizure, convulsion, something. And nobody else can see it happening. This goes on for 30 seconds, maybe a minute. And then I'm back in my physical body on the ground, standing up straight like nothing happened. And I'm looking around, wondering how come nobody helped me? How come nobody is looking at me funny? Why is nobody wondering why was that guy just having a mad seizure on the ground? Just wondering any comment on that.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting experience, Marilyn. You know, and many people, when they have a spontaneous out-of-body experience, they describe this that we call the vibrational state, these strange vibrations that sometimes at the beginning they can be very strong, very obvious, very, I would even say the adjective rough. At the beginning, they certainly catch us by surprise, but from these vibrations, you know, the person usually ends up having an out-of-body experience, and I would say most spontaneous, most involuntary out-of-body experiences start with these vibrations. And so I'm thinking that this that you're calling this violent seizure here probably were these vibrations of the energetic body or the etheric body, and this is what prompted you outside the body. And this is also the reason why once you came back, you know, you were just standing, and in essence, you know, there was no, I don't know, evidence of a physical seizure, so to speak. So this is actually a very common sensation. I actually, in your, you know, midday naps, I don't know, Merlin, if also you have felt other sensations of OBE, like for example, sometimes people hear a noise around their head, you know, like a train, like an engine, like a very, very loud, you know. Sometimes also, again, the sensation of falling. We feel the sleeping paralysis, the vibration. Sometimes we feel like a pressure around the head, sometimes a lot of tingling all over the body. And all of these sensations basically let us know that we are in the process of disconnecting from the body, that we are in this transitional state. The important thing here, I guess, is to study them a little bit. You know, we explained them on the first classes, simply because when we don't know them and we feel them in the middle of the night out of the blue, they catch us by surprise, you know, and our normal reaction is, what is this? What is happening to me? So they're basically a source of fear, so to speak. But, you know, even me, you know, after decades of having these experiences, I still feel these sensations. It's just that, of course, you know, once the person has the information, their reaction to those sensations is a very constructive, positive one. The person, once they start feeling them, they start, you know, their interpretation is, great, this is happening, here I go, let me go further. So they become, you know, much more of a source of a motivation than a fear. So what you describe, yeah, sounds very much like a spontaneous out-of-body experience.
How long do you think people have been practicing astral projection? Since the beginning of time?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah, because some people, for some reason or another, they seem to have a predisposition, a tendency towards having them more spontaneously, more naturally. In essence, George, just like anything, really, some people have predisposition for playing the piano, for athletics, for math. So some people have a predisposition towards disconnecting from their body. So I'm sure, you know, since ancient times, people have had out-of-body experiences and had these mystic voyages, as many times several, different cultures have described it.
Sounds like you enjoy doing what you're doing, as I asked you before, but does it ever get tense for you?
Well, sometimes, a little bit, yes, simply because of the demand, I would say. You know, there are so many different cities, so many different people sometimes calling and wanting to develop their abilities, and at the same time to understand their experiences. That, you know, us, certainly the instructors at IAC, we are stretched thin, you know, trying to go and give a class to a group here and a class to a group there. So that sometimes gets a little bit intense, but, you know, in the good sense, it's a productive type of stress. It's welcomed, indeed.
It sure is. And your website, of course, is?
It is iacworld.org, iacworld.org, since we are a nonprofit. And there also, you know, listeners, they can, click on the calendar of activities and see the different cities and the online schedule and everything if they're interested in taking classes.
We've got Julia in Salt Lake City, Utah now. Hi, Julia. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've had a lot of out-of-body experiences. The last ones I had were seeing my two grandchildren born through my daughter. And I just want to find out how long my out-of-body experience can last before something serious would happen to my physical body.
You mean at any given time?
Yeah.
What's the longest somebody's been in an OBE, Luis?
Yeah, the record, right?
Yeah.
Many individuals, they have out-of-body experiences, and there is, in essence, you know, nobody there measuring it. It would be hard to say what is the record. But what I can tell you, Julia, as an idea is the average, first of all, of out-of-body experiences is between 15 and 25 minutes, and this is physical time. So the time that you see on the alarm clock on your night table, because the time outside the body can be very different. I know sometimes to simplify, you know, certain books, certain people, they say there is no time outside the body. But there is a sequence of events, but how you feel time outside the body varies quite a bit depending on the dimension that you are projected to. So sometimes you're outside the body and you feel that, you know, an hour went by and you come back and 20 minutes went by on your alarm clock. On other experiences, you feel that 3 hours went by. On others, you know, 2 days, and you come back and still the same 20 minutes went by on your alarm clock. Now, with...
Hold on, Lewis. We'll come back with that in just a moment. Well, it sure is, and on our next Coast to Coast program, Friday night into Saturday morning, we're going to talk about monsters and then those great open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Lots of emails from people who love the idea of our Coast Give Back program tied into Beyond Belief. As a matter of fact, one individual even offered to develop a website for this. Tom Danheiser, our producer, will be the administrator of that. Something, Tom, we talked about 2 years ago, but we're getting close. 500 more members for Beyond Belief, and I think we're there.
We'll get there very soon. We're going to create a website, and we're going to do the right thing.
And it's the honor system for people who write in and need some money.
Yes.
You know, because we've done that. We've helped people with mortgages and their utility bills. I mean, we're not talking about a huge amount. Per se, but it helps.
Everything helps. Yeah, absolutely.
And who knows? You know, you might be able to distribute many to a lot of people.
I think we will. And I know that we get requests just during the year sometimes for things. So we'll be able to fulfill these now, which is really exciting. It's the right thing to do.
So if you want to help out, just go to beyondbelief.com and sign up to watch the TV show and get us closer to our goal where we can handle that situation.
And welcome back to Coast, Luis Manero with us. We're talking about his work, Demystifying the Out-of-Body Experience, and we'll take your calls. Let's go back to Julia, if we can, Luis, where we're talking about,
yes.
She wanted to know about how long an OBE can last. So how long do you think they can last?
Yeah, so I was telling her that the average is between 15 and 25 minutes, but in essence, they can last longer. They can, you know, go for 40 minutes, 45. An hour is already
wow.
Almost the equivalent of running a marathon. You know, it doesn't happen on your first OBEs, but eventually it can start to happen. But one of the important things to mention there is that, you know, if you're outside the body and your physical body starts to need you back, you're going to feel a tug of the silver cord, and you're basically going to come back and snap back into your physical body. So really there won't be any harm done to your physical body because you're outside the body, because you will come back. And that's actually, you know, one of the mechanisms that ends up stopping your out-of-body experiences at the end, and the reason why sometimes it takes, you know, 20 minutes or 25 or 15 or so. But again, you know, don't confuse the physical time with the non-physical time. Really, sometimes you can have experiences, not the most common of them, where you feel that you were out, you know, 4 or 5 days, and then you come back, and again, 30 minutes, 20 minutes went by on the physical time, and it takes you sometimes a little bit of time to re-understand where you were, what you wanted to do that day, where were you going to go. I have had experiences in which I come back, I open my eyes in my bedroom, and I am looking at my bedroom, and I am thinking, I know this place. I know that I know this place, but it doesn't immediately click in me that I am already back in my bedroom. And it takes me maybe 2, 3, 4, you know, a few seconds until I realize, oh, I'm physical again. I'm back in my body. So important not to confuse the two.
Okay, back to final calls. Thanks, Julia. I hope that helps you. She was concerned that her body would deteriorate in a lengthy OBE session. Does that happen?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And, you know, as a matter of fact, something to add is that generally speaking, more often than not, when we come back from an out-of-body experience, we are much more rested than anything else because we absorb a lot of energies or bioenergies or chi, you know, during the out-of-body experience. And then we are even, usually we actually end up sleeping less because we are already more energized.
Next up, Paul in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Paul. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks for having me on the show, George.
Hi. Thanks.
Hi, Luis.
Hi. How are you?
Great. I just want to make sure to chime in and share a story about how an OBE saved my life. When I was 13, I thought that was interesting how you said about the ages and OBEs. When I was 13, I was a very young student of the occult, and I was setting up an experiment for myself to basically buy candlelight, look at a reflection in some crystals to see if I could see the future or something like that, whatever I had in mind when I was a kid. And I had the television on, and there was a Mr. Ed marathon that was going on. And essentially what happened was I feel like I put myself in a trance state and then fell asleep afterwards by looking into the candlelights and the reflection off these crystals. And when I fell asleep, I rolled over and knocked over the candle onto the carpet, and the carpet started on fire. I didn't know what was happening because I was asleep, of course, but I remember having a dream where I was up on the ceiling looking down at my body, and the fire, the carpet had been on fire, and it was getting close to my head. And as soon as I had that vision, I woke up out of my sleep, and the fire was close to my head. The Mr. Ed marathon that was going on TV was still on. I got up and called the fire department and everything was ended up okay, but it was very
sounds like a precognitive dream, Luis, doesn't it?
It does. And by the way, Paul, were you, while you were outside your body, I don't know, were you actually able to see the scene unfolding? You know what was happening?
Yes, I was looking. I was up on the ceiling, and I was looking down at my body.
Okay.
And I could see the fire getting very close to my head.
Huh.
Okay. Yeah. So, yes, indeed, you know, because we are aware, because we can see, you know, what is going on in real time and at the moment, we can, in certain situations, of course, even save ourselves, like what you're saying, but certainly come back and act on whatever is occurring or is happening. Interesting, very interesting. You know, even this that you're mentioning of, you know, observing the physical reality from the non-physical reality and trying to set up experiments and everything. We have a very interesting, just adding here something to all of this, we have a very interesting activity that is mainly research, really, where we have maybe 50 or 60 people lying down in the ballroom of a hotel room, and they have to leave their body. They have to go to another little meeting room in another wing of the hotel that is completely empty and locked. And in that meeting room, we have put a laptop that just simply picks up a random image and displays it on the monitor. So they have to see the image, then come back to the ballroom where their physical body is at. They wake up, they fill out a form, and then, you know, this is taken to an auditor, somebody that's not associated with the IAC, a journalist, a college professor, etc. And they just basically sign them attesting to the fact that they sold the forms before they opened the door. And then, you know, the door is open and, you know, you go and you verify and you see, you know, who got the hit and everything. And we have already had very interesting results, certainly a lot of hits, but also very interesting results in trying to understand how our perception of the physical reality works when we are outside the body. For some people, it seems to be very clear, very sharp. For other people, sometimes can be a little bit fuzzy, a little bit grainy, so to speak, you know, like old TVs that were not in HD. But the entire setup of the experiment and the accumulation of data is certainly very, very interesting, you know, part of the efforts of providing, you know, conventional data, so to speak.
Does the astral body get energy when it's floating above the physical body at night during the sleep stage?
It does, George. And by the way, this reminds me that this was a question that you had asked me before. You know, one of the main reasons why we disconnect from the body every night is to absorb this bioenergy and this chi. So while we sleep, there isn't only the physical recovery, you know, muscular and brain and all of that, but there's also a bioenergetic recovery or a chi, a prana recovery. And this is one of the main reasons why we disconnect in during the night, and that's also why the further out we go, the more bioenergy we absorb and the more rested we are in the morning.
We go to Alice in Hitchcock, Texas now. Welcome to the program. Well, Alice is, there she is. Hi, Alex. Go ahead, Alice.
Okay, hi. How you doing?
Thank you
for seeing my call.
Sure.
I have a situation, like, and hello to both of you. Like, I've been... sleep, but I can't get up.
You've got sleep paralysis.
Oh, okay.
That's the problem. Explain it to her very quickly, Lewis.
Yes, thank you. We're gonna hire you, George.
That's right.
Thank you.
Sleep paralysis.
Yeah, which is again extremely, extremely common. And. Probably, Alice, in your case, I don't know if it also...
Can you get hurt in sleep paralysis?
No, not necessarily, or at least I haven't, you know, seen any cases or any evidence of anybody getting hurt or having any problem. The main problem really is the interpretation of the moment and the fact that we enter into a panic many times. You know, people conclude that they have basically passed away and that they are dead, and which obviously is not the case. They come back and they realize, you know, here I am again using my physical body. So the biggest problem is the interpretation of that moment, and that's why having the information is so valuable. you know, so as to be able even to take advantage of that moment and go further. Because in essence, from that state is the easiest state from which to have an out-of-body experience from, because you are more out than in. And that's the reason why you cannot move the physical body.
Joe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Joseph, go ahead.
How you doing?
Good, Joe. Thanks.
So great to talk to you again. I haven't called in quite a while. Personally, I love the sleep paralysis state. Cause you had it as many times as I've had it, you actually begin to like it so much in that state. But I had a comment and a question. I'm really enjoying your guest, Louise, tonight. In fact, I just ordered your book, sir, from Amazon, so I'm looking forward to reading it.
Beautiful. It's a great book.
Now, you were talking earlier in the interview whenever you were saying about, like, the 1 in 100, whenever people have, like, the really, like, profound out-of-body experiences. I had about a dozen now, but only my first one did I have that really profound one. And I just wanted to describe that really quick, and then it'll lead into a question. But the best way I could describe it is it's, like, my vision. I can see in front of me, behind me, above me, below me. I had, like, 360-degree vision all at once. And it's like I didn't even have any type of a body. It's like almost as if I existed as a thought form. And I went to this black void, and I seen this brilliant white light way in the distance. And I wanted to check out, you know, what's this white light? And when I got to there, it was instantaneous. And it was brightest light you could ever see, but it wasn't blinding. So I decided to merge with the light. And when I did, I mean, the best way I could describe it is it felt like pure bliss. And it's like I knew everything about everything. But when I came back to my physical body, it's almost like our physical brains aren't designed to retain that much information. So I was only able to hold on to a little bit of it. But my question that I have for you, sir, is I've heard William Buhlman and Robert Bruce on your program before, George.
Yeah.
In fact, I talked to Robert Bruce one time on your show. And they describe sometimes people having out-of-body experiences with their pets. I'm a huge dog lover. In fact, I'm a dog trainer. And I've never had an out-of-body experience with my dog, but I'm just wondering, Louise, how often have you encountered in your research people having out-of-body experiences with their pets? That'd be something I'd like to do, but I haven't done it yet. I'm just wondering how much you've come across it in your research.
Yeah, you know, I certainly have come across it, and I have heard of people having them, and I actually have had a couple, but it doesn't seem to be the most common type of experience, and I think that in part, you know, because of course, the human, we need to, you know, spend a certain amount of time or have had already a certain number of experiences in an OBE, but also probably I think it also is dependent on the pet, on whether the pet actually has, you know, some OBEs and is able to be relatively awake. I say this because, you know, sometimes when you're looking at animals outside the body, almost like humans, they are basically unaware, floating above their body, again, separated by a couple of inches. And they are outside their body, but they are basically inert. But to see them aware outside their body and active outside their body, it's rare. It's rare. I would say you have to have a lot of experiences or sometimes just get lucky, you know, to have one.
But it does happen.
It does happen. Absolutely. It does happen. And I think that your own out-of-body experiences, Joe, probably are going to end up influencing your pet, you know, because of the energy field that you're creating, so that they are going to start, you know, your dog or whatever type of pet you have, so that they start to be a little bit more active and more aware during the night. So I would certainly keep on trying, no doubt. But certainly, it's, you know, what I have seen is that it's a little bit rare.
Luis, I want to thank you for being on the program. Stay in touch with us. You're a great guest.
Indeed, my pleasure. My pleasure, George.
And the book, Demystifying the Out-of-Body Experience, and the website, of course, linked up. We always make it easy for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.